We have Brenton on the phone with us. Let's go right to Brenton Mock, our guest who showed up. Brenton, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for having me on. Sorry about that.
That's all right, man. You know, as you get older in life, you don't sweat the small stuff. You just got to roll with what happens. Brenton Mock was a New Orleans-based journalist, now in D.C., who serves as lead reporter on the Voter Rights Watch, a reporting partnership of ColorLines.com and The Nation magazine, a reporting fellow for ColorLines.com, and web editor for the online journal. You're still with them, the citizen journal-driven blog site Bridge the Gulf, and helped launch the New Orleans online investigative news site The Lens. So, Brenton, good to have you with us, man. So,
yeah, thanks for having me on.
In the time that we have here, let's jump into this, because I think that these cases jumping before the Supreme Court right now, even though they're not got a lot of public attention, at least most of them have not, are huge. The one that has gotten public attention is Sean McCutcheon et al. Versus the Federal Election Commission, and this could is like Citizens United on steroids.
I mean, it really is. Citizens United was about whether whether corporations could give basically unlimited amounts of money to super PACs, right? And so long as a super PAC was technically not connected to a candidate running for office. I mean, I think we know in practicality that super PACs are very connected. But in terms of what Sean McCutcheon versus Federal Election Commission is reviewing, it's whether an individual can give beyond the aggregate limits basically directly to a candidate. It's a lot more complicated than that,
yeah.
But this isn't about just giving to a super PAC. It's about whether you can give directly to a candidate and also the directly connected political parties and committees. And right now there's a limit on how much one could give. I believe the limit is $48,000 directly to a candidate over every 2 years, which limits the number of candidates that you can give the maximum amount to. And if this is ruled in favor of McCutcheon, then that cap will be lifted, meaning you could give the maximum amount to as many candidates as you like, and it could lead to a single donor basically contributing as much as $3.6 million per cycle, and it would just be crazy.
You couple that with the voting rights, the gutting of the Voting Rights Act and Citizens United and the gerrymandering that takes place in states across the country, both Republican and Democrat, but in this case, mostly in Republican-held areas. This all could have a very devastating effect on the future of our democracy, I think. This is not small potatoes.
It's definitely not. I mean, what it does is it keeps shifting the advantage in politics to the wealthy and the wealthy elite. I mean, when you look at people of color, especially in this day and age with this widening racial wealth gap, I mean, you know, a lot of African Americans and Latino Americans, they don't have money to donate copious amounts to campaigns and to candidates and committees. So what'll happen is the wealthy, the Koch brothers and their ilk, will be able to give millions and millions of dollars, while regular people will have to rely on basically just their vote at the ballot box. In terms of who or what candidates actually respond to, you know, do you respond to the guy who showed up at the ballot box? Do you respond to the guy who, gave $3.6 million? I mean, basically we're talking about bribery here.
And there's another case here that is also flying on the wire for most people, and people look at it as a minor case, but the way you wrote about it, I think, clearly says it's not. And I think it's important for people to know that it's out there, which is Mount Holly versus Mount Holly Garden Citizens in Action. This is not just about housing. This case, if it's decided, could have again profound effects on the issue of how discrimination is legally perceived.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, it's really not a case that has been discussed heavily, but it's going to have profound effects. I mean, what Mount Holly is arguing is someone has challenged whether disparate impacts are constitutional when when looking at the enforcement of fair housing laws, fair housing civil rights laws. And basically what disparate impact says is if a law or a rule has led to people of color being disproportionately discriminated against, you know, as an effect of the law, you know, as a the result of a law, then that becomes a disparate impact, right? I mean, more black people are disparately impacted than white people or Latinos, more disparately impacted than white people. And that's a fundamental principle that undergirds basically all of our civil rights, well, a lot of our civil rights laws. Not all of them have the results effect, but whether you're talking about labor civil rights laws or whether you're talking environmental justice civil rights laws or even voting rights laws, you know, a lot of what the deal is with the Voting Rights Act has to do with, you know, what is the result of a law that is passed if you change an election rule. If the result is that a disproportionate amount of African Americans will be burdened by it as opposed to white people, then the federal government can stop that law. I mean, you don't have to prove that a person intentionally tried to discriminate against it. And so this is what's at the heart of this ruling. And right now we actually have unfortunately, we have a Supreme Court conservative majority that really does not like disparate impacts. I mean, John Roberts has argued against it since he was a attorney in the Reagan administration. I mean, we know Clarence Thomas loathes it. Scalia doesn't like it. So, I mean, this is going to be really one worth looking at.
It's huge. I mean, I think people realize because the question of whether the intent of the law and the effect of the law we're talking about, then the difference there makes a big difference. Is a huge gap in terms of how we can address issues of long term systemic racism and class discrimination in America. This is really a very very important case. I'm really glad you wrote about it, and I'm glad we're talking about it. We'll talk about it more in the coming weeks as well. Let me jump to the Bill Schuette, I pronounce that right, Attorney General from Michigan, versus Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigrant Rights, and Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary case, which is another. I mean, affirmative action clearly is an issue that divides America pretty deeply. So talk a bit about the effect of this case, what it means.
Yeah, so affirmative action is basically being tried again before the Supreme Court. We know that there was a case of Abigail Fisher versus Texas over the summer. That was about affirmative action. It was about a white girl who was not able to get into a Texas university, and she believed that because, you know, black students got in, that she was discriminated against because of her race. And so, you know, she wanted to have the affirmative action quotient determined unconstitutional. The Supreme Court punted on that. They didn't actually make a definitive ruling on it. Instead, they kicked it down to a lower court. But now they're looking at it again. And this is a little bit different. I mean, it's not an individual who is suing because they feel they've been discriminated against. This is about how the policy is actually instituted. So at the University of Michigan, for universities in Michigan, basically there was an affirmative action policy in place, but the state passed by ballot referendum a ban on affirmative action policies. And so what this case is about is basically it's about who can determine whether affirmative action can be applied. Is it the university or is it the state? And the state kind of took that power away from universities to just determine that there would be a blanket ban. And now they're arguing to see if that was a violation of the 14th Amendment Equal Protection Clause.
So Brent, I'm sorry, we have to go. We have the mayor's online with us. We have to go to her to talk right now. But Brent, I want to thank you once again for being a guest on the show, Brenton Mock. We will link to this piece you wrote for Color Lines and look forward to having you back on very soon.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and welcome to the region. Good to have you up here.